Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. You see the smile on my face? Of course, you can't help but smile when you say Marianne Minnick, who is a veterinary technician, an old friend of mine, a president and founder of All Pets Wellness Center in Aurora. Marianne, you've been talking to me for years about things like the human-animal bond, and you had this dream of creating a one-center home base for all of that, and you're in the process of doing that. So congratulations.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yes, after several years of, or many years of thought and several years of construction, we have finally been able to officially open our doors to the general public.
And those doors
are so excited.
Those doors are open at where?
We are in Aurora at 1975 Melissa Lane. We're near I-88 and Orchard, so we're right off of the highway and main thoroughfares.
And as I said, I think I set it up this way. I mean, your dream was to, and we'll talk about some of the specifics about what you offer, some of mm-hmm. which is different than anything else, maybe in the country, certainly in the Chicago area. But it's still all centered around this thing we call the human-animal bond.
Absolutely. I grew up with animals, with dogs, so I understand. You know, I've been understanding, and as I got older, it occurred to me that there are many people who love dogs or who love animals who, for whatever reason, don't have an opportunity to live with them. And so one of our main areas in what we want to do, I shouldn't say main areas, but one of the things that we're planning to do is have some community programs where we invite in the community, that's especially seniors, veterans, and people with special needs. We're so that they can interact with each other and with some of our animals. I call us a lifestyle center for pets and the people who love them. We kind of encompass a complete ecosystem. Like you said, a lot of places don't have anything like this. We want to address the physical, the emotional, and the social needs of both our animals and our community.
What gave you the idea of asking people in the community, particularly senior citizens, but also those that might have limited social interactions because of limitations they may have, into the facility to participate in social programs with dogs?
Basically, I don't know. You know what? I think the good Lord kind of put that into my brain just because I've interacted with people, a lot of people throughout my life in all the various jobs. And so I've had an opportunity to see how some people are limited. And especially, the first thing that came to mind was the seniors. Because several years ago when I was working in a clinic, one of our clients was a little Westie that had really bad skin condition. And her owners were these two sweet little old ladies who landed in assisted living. One was in memory care and the other was in the regular assisted living, and they didn't know what to do with their dog. Mm. The 7-year-old little girl, because of her skin issues, they were concerned that if they released her to rescue, that they would put her to sleep because nobody would want her. And so because Westies are my main breed, I started working with her. I was technically fostering her. And so I would take her to go visit her moms, and it was the best thing. It was the best thing for them and all the people in the space, in the center. It was like, oh, Lucy's coming. Oh yeah, where's she at? And again, this is many years ago, like almost 15 years ago. So it was part of my experience that senior citizens often don't have that opportunity. And then I started to think a little bit more, and we were doing, several years ago, we were trying to do a program with veterans and how the dogs affected their lives. And so that, and then of course people with special needs. My nephew is autistic, and so I am very much in tune with the autistic community, and you know those folks don't often have opportunities, and so I wanted to open up, especially to the people who don't generally have the opportunities to do this, because animals, as you know, animals are just. They are so incredibly important in our lives, and they affect us in ways we do not understand until it actually hits us in the face.
Yeah, what you say is absolutely true about that. And in fact, later in the program, we'll be talking about animal assisted intervention and training methods that are appropriate to use for that. But about how today. Dogs are everywhere making a difference, mm-hmm. whether it be reading programs in libraries or whether it be for people with disabilities or whether it be for people who happen to be incarcerated. I mean, and the list goes on and on. And we know through internationally study after study after study after study that this mm-hmm. stuff really does work. It does make a difference. You know, I've known you for a long time. You know me fairly well, yeah. but... You may not know this. I'm ordained. So am I going to host a wedding or two at your place?
Oh, you know what? That would be amazing. do you mind if I put you on our list as ministers?
If it's not a religious thing, but yeah, of course. But here's what that was just supposed to be a clever transition to say you are going to be hosting. Are these weddings for people? Yes. Weddings for dogs? What is this?
Well, they're weddings for people who want to include their pets in the ceremony and potentially in the reception, because we have enough space here that we could host the wedding itself and the reception. So, seriously, because there are so many people now that have their dogs included.
Yeah,
in their ceremonies.
How many guests would this be that do you have space for, do you think? And also, is this you in the kitchen making brownies? I mean, where does the food come from?
Well, we'd have to cater the food in. We do have a cafe, but the cafe is set up more for light snacks, coffee, beverages, smoothies, those kinds of things. Eventually, I'd like to expand it to salads and those kinds of, and a little bit more, but something, you know, just light fare at our cafe. But we, in fact, I have hosted a wedding here and a reception for a close friend of ours a couple of years ago, because we've been in this building for a while. It's taken us quite a while to get open officially. But we can probably host 100 people.
All right.
We've got plenty of space.
If it's a moderately small wedding, 100 people and a couple mm-hmm. of dogs, you're all over the idea. We'll be back talking about some more that you offer at All Pet Wellness Center in Aurora with Marianne Minnick on WG. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. I'm talking with veterinary technician Marianne Minnick, who is president and founder of All Pets Wellness Center. That's in Aurora, where so many things are offered. I don't even know if we'll have time to go through all of these. We were talking about weddings weddings for dogs? We're talking about weddings for people. But you know what? Some people do that. So if there's a wedding for a dog, how about doggy bark mitzvahs? Would you do that?
Yes, absolutely. Oh, that would be fun too.
It would be. All right. So
no, anything, you know, and if we want a quinceañeros for the dogs too. Or and even cats if they want. You know, we don't often see the cats in these events, but you know, I built a space as a cattery. But it's got a different use. It's going to have a different use in the interim for a little while. But we will be able to have host cats, and it'll be really state of the art in that it'll have all the the shelving on the walls and, yeah, and ways for the for them to get their, you know, get all their exercise and stuff. So
that's great.
We can't forget our kitty friends.
I'm all over that. And it won't be the same place, I would hope, where you board dogs, which is something else you do, correct?
Yes. Yes, we do boarding, we do daycare, boarding, we have training programs here. We also have a world-class groomer who's coming in to open up a shop here. And then, I don't know if you're familiar with Happy Dog Barkery in Downers Grove. She's been in business, she's a bakery, a dog bakery that she's famous for her cakes and cookies and all her homemade treats. We're opening up a satellite here, so we'll have fresh homemade cakes people can order for their pups for birthdays and other special occasions. We also have an indoor dog park. We have about 2,000 square feet of open space.
Well, I was just gonna ask about that. So, at this time of year. Some dogs, sure, they can withstand the weather and deal with the outdoors in a dog park. But many dogs just can't. Older dogs, for example, still need to socialize a little bit. Or dogs that are smaller dogs. I mean, you could put 12 mm-hmm. coats or sweaters on these dogs, and if it's 10 degrees below zero, it's still too cold out. So you offer an opportunity for dogs to be dogs, and to be mm-hmm. with other dogs at your indoor dog park.
Yes, yeah, we do. The advantage for us, I know some people are afraid of dog parks. The advantage for us is that every animal, every dog that comes in our facility, we do require them to be temperament tested, we don't want anybody to get to have an accident. To have an accident, really, you know, it's generally not the dog's fault if they get into a tussle. We just want to make sure that everybody is going to be safe at all times. Safety is our number one concern.
I'm all for that. And by the way, speaking of that, in your daycare, do you have a way in mm-hmm. which people drop off their dogs at daycare, then they get fired at work because they're paying attention to watching the camera about what the dog is doing rather than doing their work?
Do we... I didn't understand your question, though. I'm sorry.
Do you have cameras so people can watch their dogs?
I'm sorry. We do have cameras. We haven't set them up so that the owners can watch their pets yet. But in the interim, we do send pictures galore. We text. We stay in touch with the owners throughout the day, and especially for the dogs who are boarding with us. We like to be able to send a picture at night to say goodnight. But we eventually will. We're still growing.
Well, sure.
Facility.
Yeah, you just opened. I mean, I understand that. So we talked about the weddings that you have, but there could be other special events as well, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We have plenty of room. We have one very large space. It's kind of a conference room space. For anybody who wants to host meetings, it can be for dogs, with dogs or not. We have in our area about 30,000 square feet of space. So we are planning on hosting events, things like craft fairs, especially ones that focus on people who make animal items. We're going to be hosting several rescue events. We are working with several rescue organizations, and we want to grow that list to help promote their pets, their animals that they're trying to find good new homes for. So a lot of rescue events other events, meetings. We've got plenty of room, and we are open to all kinds of things, especially my friends in the dog clubs. I know that we often have trouble finding a place to host our meetings that doesn't cost an arm and a leg and that we can bring our dogs to.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
another,
this is a great place for that.
Another nice thing that is really sweet that you're building out right now are opportunities in the Memorial Garden.
Yes. Yes, we have our benefactor who helped us get to this point, they lost their adult daughter 2 years ago. And so, and Sam was an amazing animal advocate and dog rescuer and an incredible artist. So we are the memorial garden is dedicated to her. In fact, we have placed a picture. It's a pointillism that she did of her two pit bulls and their faces. It's absolutely amazing. So, and we're working to build, create something like her story, so that when people are there, they understand why we did this, you know. Because oftentimes you go someplace and you see these things and you don't understand the meaning behind them. So we want people who come, and it's right next to, we have a huge pond behind our building with a walking track around it. So it'll be an opportunity. It's an opportunity for us to exercise the dogs that are here and for people to walk their dogs around. And also it's very peaceful back there, even though we're near 88, but the traffic noise kind of becomes white noise when you're there. It's amazing. So we put it in this past summer, and so as time goes on, we will, the bushes and the flowers and everything will grow and bloom, and it's a very peaceful. We also have a waterfall.
Wow.
And
like Niagara? It's like Niagara.
I'm sorry, not a fall, a water fountain.
Oh, okay. Fountain. Okay. I'm thinking Niagara.
It's a water feature. Well, see, we wanted to incorporate the earth, the sun, or earth, air, water, and water.
Wow. Okay.
So we have fire.
Okay, so we're almost out of time here, Marianne. I apologize, but I know you're launching a podcast soon. Where a well-known broadcaster will interview celebrities about their pets that I'll be hosting and that I'm honored to do. So once that launches, I'll talk more about that. But in the meantime, where do people find you?
They can call us on our at 630-322-9900 or allpetsaurora.com. And if you want to try to email us, we're at Let's Connect. At allpetsaurora.com. Any one of those ways. You can also look us up on Facebook. We're at All Pets Wellness Center on Facebook and Instagram. So, join us, contact us. And thankfully the phone's been ringing off the hook recently since we started posting that we are open.
So you are open. You are ready.
We are open. Yes.
Marianne, thank you so much. So you ask, what is the state of the cat? According to the Catalyst Council and their State of the Cat 2025 report findings, feline veterinary visits continued to grow for a third consecutive year for cats. Yay! Reaching record levels of clinical visit. But that's great. But still, dogs outpace cats when it comes to medicalization. Advances in AI-enabled assessment, behavioral data capture and diagnostics and predictive analysis are increasingly tools that cat owners, interestingly, are more interested in and taking more advantage of compared to dog owners. The major drivers identified in the latest market insights for cats include wellness visits for cats, stronger kitten adoption rates, and the impact of inflation on service pricing and care isn't as much for cats as it is for dogs, but as I said, cats still remain under-medicalized when compared to their canine cousins. Still, while about 70% of cats see a veterinarian in their first year, over a third of cats remain without veterinary intervention for over 3 years with clear gaps in routine care, unless clearly something is wrong. And the problem with that, for example, let me give you one example. So do you have a stethoscope in your kitchen? And if you did listen to your cat's heartbeat, do you know what you're listening for? I mean, is it rap music you're hearing in your cat? I don't think so. I mean, what are you hearing, you know? So you wouldn't know, of course, unless you're a veterinary professional. And that's one reason why seeing a veterinary professional, not once, but twice a year for cats. Now, why did I use stethoscope as an example? The most common cause of death in cats, is in adult cats anyways, probably feline hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, which is a heart disease. The good news is that if you catch it before there are signs of the disease, before the cats actually become sick, then you can do something about it. There's a new drug called Felicin CA1 that can help these cats greatly, but not if they're not diagnosed, right? Because at the point where they get heart failure or show another sign like throw up what's called a thromboembolism, which is like a stroke-like event, at that point the drug doesn't work so well anymore. So how do you catch disease early? That's by going to the veterinarian. In which case, in any which case, you can learn more about all of this on my website, stevedale.tv. Kelly Lewis is an animal-assisted intervention specialist. I like talking with specialists. She is an assessor and subject matter expert at the Association of Animal Intervention Professionals, which is under the heading of Pet Partners. And I saw you, Kelly, or met you, actually, at an event I was speaking at, and we had a conversation, and I said, this is so interesting. Why don't we just talk about it on the radio? So here we are on the radio, and this is where I start. What is animal-assisted intervention for people who don't know?
Animal-assisted intervention is actually the use of, and I say use, we like to more prefer to it as partnership with animals in any kind of therapeutic, educational, recreational intervention that actually is done by professionals. We're talking about therapists, of course, mental health counselors, of course, hospitals, group homes, but we're also including speech therapists, recreational therapists, all of those places that are therapeutic that we can use animals. AAAIP covers all of those with education, standardizing protocols, levels of degrees of training and inclusion.
Okay, and what is AAAIP?
It is the Association of Animal Assisted Interventions Professionals. Like I just said, all of those professionals who can partner with, harness, quite literally, the restorative power of the human-animal bond and use those in therapeutic settings that are impactful and actually carry a very high level of endorphin release and scientific evidence-based improvements in all of those.
Yeah, and when I said AAAIP earlier in my little introduction, I think I forgot to say animal-assisted intervention. You know, a couple things I want to ask you about. First of all, as background, I mean, I've done this for decades, and I recall when our dog at the time was involved with the Children's Hospital here in Chicago and some other facilities as well, greatly around the country, you had to convince these facilities that these animals are safe and they do good and there is huge benefit for those in the facilities. Today, my experience, Kelly, it's the other way around. There are more facilities that are yearning, desperate to have animals come in. And it's not only dogs, by the way. It can be miniature horses. It can be cats and rabbits, sometimes guinea pigs, and maybe other species as well. They're desperate for them. So it seems to be that now there is an agreement and understanding and enough science out there from all around the world that this stuff really isn't anecdotal. These animals do make a difference.
It is absolutely proven scientifically, and there is a great need for it. We have organizations like AAAIP so that we can set those standards, make sure those animals are safe to go in, We are doing it as quickly as possible, but we have to take into account training methods. The training methods that are approved for facility and therapy dogs don't include any aversion or punishment-based training, and that, quite frankly, takes longer than the other training, but it gives you a more solid outcome. What we have to have when we go into facilities, I work with justice-involved youth. When I go into those secure facilities, my dog has to trust me, and I have to trust my dog. And if I have used any of the punitive or aversive training methods, then that dog might not be as stable as the dogs that I take in every day.
Now, there are many purposes for these dogs, everything from reading programs in libraries to, I mentioned, going into hospitals, children's hospitals included, rehabilitation centers, but and the list goes on and on. And you mentioned one thing that could be on that list, but I don't want to gloss over that. So what do you do?
I work with justice-involved youth in the state of Georgia, and I have for a little over 10 years, almost 11 years now, with taking therapy dogs inside secure facilities. We also have had the jail dog type training programs. We had a reading program that we are just starting back up, which has been hugely impactful. When we talk about a reading program, our kids are sometimes, behind in their reading skills. So if we get a kid who is older and old enough to take the GED test, but they are reading on a sixth grade reading level, we can bring them through our reading program. And with lots of dedication and sitting and reading out loud with those dogs, we can get them to the level to take a GED. And that actually, is also science proven that If you have a high school degree, a high school diploma or a GED, it changes the trajectory of your entire life. So we're helping these kids get to level in reading and learn compassion and empathy in training and visiting every day to bring up those endorphins. They live in a very endorphin-deprived environment. Everything is stainless steel and plastic and cream-colored. The dog comes in and the room lights up. It's an immediate and instant improvement in morale and emotional balance, actually. So,
where does the dog walk into? I'm into where?
Secure facilities for incarcerated youth.
Okay, so we're talking about jails, essentially?
Jails and prisons, they're very similar across the nation. The adult jail and prison system is reflected in the same way in the juvenile systems. So we have the centers where the kids are waiting to go for placement, or the kids are waiting to go to their court dates. And then we have the ones who are already adjudicated and spending their time. So we service both of those in Georgia, and we also, and across the nation, that kind of is the way it happens. But they're built and run differently, but it's security, and there's not art on the wall. There's not, well, in some places there are, but there's just not a lot of extra. It's like jails and prison, yes.
Yeah, and when they see dogs, you said, there it is. A smile is plastered on their face. But what dogs are best for this sort of work? What dogs shouldn't be doing it? We'll talk about all of that and training methods more when we come back with Kelly Lewis on WGN. Kelly Lewis is an animal-assisted intervention specialist, an assessment and subject matter expert with the Association of Animal-Assisted Intervention Professionals under Pet Partners. I think that time, that's a mouthful. I think I got it right that time. And what you do actually makes a difference. And I don't know how long you've been doing it, Kelly, but as I mentioned earlier, I go back long enough where people just didn't believe this stuff. These stories were just that, stories, and they were anecdotal. And today, my question is, have you actually seen, in your experience, whether it be the juveniles you support with the dogs or other people that are incarcerated or anything else you do with these dogs, reading programs you mention, have you actually witnessed the difference?
I actually have. I've seen where just immediate giggling, sometimes the kids cry. I always say that my dogs have caught more tears and heard more confessions than any adult that works in my agency. These kids rely on me. They depend on me. They know what day I'm coming because I keep a routine rotation with the dogs. You talked about what dogs are good for it. We've had so many dogs in the program. We had pit bulls have been our biggest go-to. They have trained well and reacted well, and the kids have always reacted well to them. We have a doodle now. We've had shepherds. We've had Yorkies, Shih Tzus. We've had dogs that mostly come from shelters, other dogs who've been either from breeders but always in kind of a rescue-type situation. None of our dogs have been purchased or purpose-bred. And we've trained all of our dogs ourselves, and that's one of the things that we kind of pride ourselves in that we take these dogs and we build a relationship with them, and we build a relationship with the kids with them, too. The kids have helped train every single one of our dogs.
What happens when that rotation, that consistency, predictability, isn't there maybe because the dog is sick or maybe the handler gets sick? But I'm really the dog that gets sick. Do you see empathy? Do you see huge concern from people who mm-hmm. previously have not expressed that?
Recently, one of my dogs had to have a cyst removed off her back, and she was out for a couple weeks while she healed. And thank goodness that was a benign situation. But the kids realized that I wasn't doing the normal rotation with the doodle and the pit bull, and they were very concerned about her. And very happy to see her when she returned to work, which was just this week. And every day I would walk in and they would scream her name and run to her. And they were very happy and pleased that she was doing well. So, yes, they do. They miss them when they are gone. It makes a difference. I have a dog who is retired, and he was our very first therapy dog almost 11 years ago. And the kids still ask about him because he only retired 2 years ago. And they ask about him very often. And I tell them he's just like a retired old man. He's sitting on the couch looking out the window yelling, get off my lawn.
Do you think that for these dogs that do this kind of work, there ought to be more national consistency regarding the way they are trained? Because after all, as you kind of alluded to, with aversive training methods and aversive equipment like choke collars or shock collars, you can inhibit a dog's behavior right then and there, but you're not really fixing anything. You're not changing the temperament or the reason why the dogs really might not be the best dog. Can be a great dog at home, wonderful dog, but not the best dog to do this kind of work. If it were up to you and you are queen for the day or the year, mm-hmm. would you snap your fingers and say only positive reinforcement? And if so, why?
I would absolutely do that because I feel that, especially when you are partnering with an animal, you have to have a relationship that's built on dignity and respect and trust. And you are putting, these dogs are coming into our classrooms, our hospitals, our facilities, and they have to be of right temperament. Just because, and I even say gentle leaders are aversive, because we often see, very, very often see facility dogs who are trained on gentle leaders, and they do what I have sadly named the trudge walk. Their head is down. They look at their feet the entire time they are walking on the leash. Hmm. And that's because they were trained on the gentle leaders rather than my dogs walk into a facility with their head up their tail wagging, their chest out. They're very confident to go into their work because I didn't put those aversive or punishment based. You can't build trust with fear. And that is one of the things I tell. I use an analogy with our kids. If you are in math class and your teacher is teaching you math, but she is shocking you, grabbing you by the neck, if she is hitting you or yelling at you or turning your head downward, are you learning math? And of course they say no. And then I ask them, what are you learning? And they start listing those things. They hate math. They hate the teacher, the aggression, anxiety, fear, all of those things. And if our kids can realize that if someone is teaching them in that manner, that it is not okay, then they realize that it's not okay to train the dogs in that manner. But it's very difficult to get, especially with the need that you described in the beginning, there is a great need for this. So they want to take these dogs very quickly from shelter or rescue or from purpose breeding programs and take them very quickly into facilities. And to do that, they use some of the aversive training. And I'm not judging any of that. I would snap my fingers and get rid of it all if I could. I know that some people will say it saves lives to get them out of the shelter and training very quickly, and it does.
Or does it? I mean, couldn't we do the same?
Yeah.
Right. Couldn't we do the same thing with positive reinforcement or appropriate today training methods and using other tools that we have that maybe weren't around
it
20 years ago?
Longer.
Yeah, it does take longer, but you have a more permanent solution rather than a temporary solution where you're just temporarily modifying behavior.
I agree 100%. And I think that when we go through organizations who are trying to standardize like AAIP, then we get better results. And also insurability is a question too, because the insurance companies aren't really educated on what training methods cause what issues. So I think the more the insurance companies learn about training and learn about what they're doing, they'll be a little pickier on who they cover and who they don't.
Wow, we just buried the lead there, because that is an extremely important point. I mean, today, shelters are actually going out of business, animal shelters are, because they can't afford the insurance anymore. Animal-assisted intervention activities. Listen, if you're associated with Pet Partners, you have insurance. But if you're doing it independently, you may go out of business because you can't afford the insurance anymore. So what you say there about insurance, huge issue. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But we're out of time. Kelly Lewis, thank you so much. Interesting conversation. Thank you, Kelly. There is so much to do at WGNradio.com, including hearing past episodes of this program, Steve Dale's Pet World. So let me give you some examples. I spoke with Rachel Geller. She wrote a book about cat behavior that is so spot on. Patricia McConnell, she is arguably the GOAT of all dog trainers. She is the greatest. She really is amazing, has written two of the most important books about dog training. And we had a long conversation with her about why you train a dog and how you train a dog really does matter. Oh, and then I talked to myself about my book, Ask the Dog. It's a kid's book about how to pet dogs, where to pet dogs, and how to better understand dog as a second language. All of that and more at WGNradio.com. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.